From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, investigative reporter Cheryl Jones joins us, followed by Open Lines with Cheryl. Here's what's happening. One of the most active volcanoes on Earth is erupting on Hawaii's Big Island. Officials with the U.S. Geological Survey confirming that an eruption has begun in the Kilauea Volcano's summit. Oh, boy, let's keep our fingers crossed on that. New coronavirus infections in the United States fell by 25% over the past 2 weeks. Another hopeful sign that the worst of the Delta variant wave might be behind us. Representative Chip Roy, the Republican out of Texas, has introduced a bill which would prevent Occupational Safety and Health Administration, OSHA, and other agencies from imposing fines on individuals or businesses that do not comply with President Biden's proposed COVID-19 vaccine mandate. Earlier this month, the president announced that businesses with 100 or more employees would be forced to require coronavirus vaccinations or test employees weekly. And amid all the focus on COVID-19 vaccinations, U.S. health experts have another plea: don't skip your flu shot. Flu cases have dropped to historically low levels during the pandemic. The U.S. and Europe experienced hardly any flu last winter, and the Southern Hemisphere just ended its second flu season of the coronavirus pandemic with little to report. And travelers could be looking at new COVID restrictions as we embark on the holiday season. It's one of several COVID-related updates for the airline industry. With Thanksgiving holiday just around the corner and one of the busiest times to fly, California Senator Dianne Feinstein has tweeted, "We can't allow upcoming holiday air traffic to contribute to another surge in COVID cases, that I have introduced legislation requiring passengers on domestic flights," that's domestic now, "to be vaccinated, test negative, or be fully recovered from previous COVID illness." Let's check in with Christian Wild, myheartbook.com, the great website that he has. Christian, first react, if you would, to the flu situation.
Well, here we are, George. We're here again at the beginning of flu season, which begins tomorrow. And if you're like me, you never were sure just when it started and when it ends. So I did a little checking. The flu season begins in October, peaks between December and February, and continues on through May. So why is getting that annual H1N1 flu shot such a big deal? Maybe if the vaccine had been developed before 1918, the world may have avoided the flu pandemic that killed 50 million people worldwide.
Wow.
Now, the message here, George, for all of us, and particularly the more senior listeners and their families, is that the shot, while not being 100%, may still cut the risk of this virus and being hospitalized for flu, as well as the highly dangerous pneumonia, which ultimately claims so many lives every year. The shot, in spite of not being perfect, cuts the risk by as much as 70%.
Where did the flu go last year, Christian? I think they dumped everything into COVID cases.
I know all the attention was on the COVID, yes, and the hospitalizations and everything. Now, in regard to your second story,
mandating domestic flights.
Yes. We have to remember that this Delta variant is airborne. It's of the airborne variety, and in an enclosed airplane passenger section can easily be breathed and passed from person to person. Here's an example of how this works. You may have seen in the New York Times a story a few days ago of how a high school teacher in an enclosed classroom affected 26 students. And if this measure being implemented in the airline industry is for the general good of all of us, it would seem to make perfectly good sense.
Interesting take. I would hope we don't have to mandate it on domestic flights, but let's see what happens. A medical center in Branson, Missouri, will begin issuing personal panic buttons to healthcare workers to combat the steep increase in violence against staff members over the past year. The number of incidents in which security was called to intervene rose at the Missouri hospital from 94 in 2019 to 162 in 2020. People are just bonkers. North Korea this week tested what state media called a hypersonic gliding missile, sophisticated weaponry that could be nuke-armed, giving that nation its latest technological advantage that could factor into strategic balance. Let's check in with Charles R. Smith on this one. Charles, they continue to build weaponry, don't they?
Yes, they do. In fact, they've conducted yet another test today of an advanced surface-to-air missile system. Appears to be a variant of the SA-10, better known as the S-300. It is a very large supersonic missile in the Patriot class. The Hwasong-8, on the other hand, is a singular test of what appears to be a hypersonic glide vehicle. It may take them perhaps as much as 4 to 10 years to actually perfect that. However, it is disturbing because this has been a series of tests that we have seen being conducted by North Korea. The most disturbing was their test of a missile launch from trains. They have a number of tunnels and tunnel systems in North Korea that would make this a very good system for them to deploy, as well as a recent test from a submarine.
Can these missiles reach the United States, Charles?
No. None of these missiles that I've described are capable of reaching the U.S. They are mainly either tactical or intermediate-range missiles, about 1,500 miles max range. However, the North Koreans have yet to resume tests of a large ballistic missile, which we have seen multiple times being displayed, as well as 2 to 3 tests previously. I suspect they will do so essentially as a way to try to prod the Biden administration into supporting getting rid of sanctions and providing additional relief to North Korea.
You got it. Thanks, Charles. Charles R. Smith. The House has joined the Senate to approve a bill to fund the government through December 3rd, averting a government shutdown for tomorrow. So far, so good. December 3rd's the date now. The moon is drifting away from us. Each year, our moon moves distinctly farther from Earth, just a tiny bit, about 1.5 inches, almost imperceptible. But over 1 million years, it could be a long way away, couldn't it? Wow. Many high school students feel unyielding pressure to succeed academically. This leads to a constant pursuit of educational perfection that inevitably leads to anxiety and full-blown depression in many cases, according to a new study there. Up next, Dr. Judith Orloff back with us as we talk about thriving as an empath and the Empath Survival Guide, next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Dr. Judith Orloff back with us is a psychiatrist, an empath, and an author. A couple of her books include Thriving as an Empath, the Empath Survival Guide as well. She synthesizes the pearls of traditional medicine with cutting-edge knowledge of intuition, energy, spirituality, specializing in treating empaths and highly sensitive people in her private practice. Dr. Orloff is very passionate about helping empaths come out of the closet and become empowered. She believes that empathy is the medicine that will save our world and our planet. Judith, welcome back, Doc. How are you?
Thank you. I'm great. How are you, George?
Good. Looking forward to this. So, is being an empath a good thing?
I think it's an incredible thing. I'm a psychiatrist and I'm also an empath, and I couldn't imagine living not being an empath. And an empath is super sensory. It's being able to sense and feel energy, intuit what's going on in people and the energy in the world. It's creative, it's deep, but they're challenges. They're challenges because empaths are emotional sponges, and they tend to absorb the negative energy in the world. So they're taking on so much negativity and stress from the world. And unless they learn how to not do that and ground themselves, then there are problems. Then they go on sensory overload, experience anxiety, depression, overwhelm.
Wow.
And that's not good. But you could learn how to center and ground yourself by using the self-care techniques that I talk about in Thriving as an Empath.
How much can an empath take then before they really start cracking?
It depends on the empath. If it's an untrained empath, not much. Because when an empath goes on sensory overload, what that is, if so much is coming at you so fast, and I've been on it at various times, and it's very painful, you just feel like your brain can't process all this information that's coming through to you. And so it's a state of overwhelm and really anxiety. And unless, when I go on sensory overload, I go into a quiet place, I close the shades, I get very quiet, no talking to people, I meditate, I take a bath. But that's the way to bring it back down. But if somebody doesn't know that and they keep subjecting themselves to stress, arguments, traffic, then they can get into full-blown panic attacks.
Is it unusual, though, for an empath to do that in as much as in the beginning, when they're on, they're very outgoing and carefree and everything else, and then all of a sudden when they start taking on the burdens of the world, do they shut down? Do people notice a personality change?
Yes, an empath on overload is not a good sight because they're in so much pain, and then they could get anxious and bring other people along with them in the household, family, friends. If they're anxious, then they start blowing up at other people, or they just become depressed and inward. So empaths who are able to ground themselves can sense and know things so deeply, and it's so satisfying. It's such a gift to be able to have that intuition, but you have to take care of it. And that means really taking good care of your energy and not subjecting yourself to energy vampires and being able to be around positive people and taking time out to decompress. That makes a huge difference to empaths.
Are they like magnets?
It can be in terms of energy vampires.
Yeah.
Yep. I have a chapter in the Empath Survival Guide on the toxic attraction between empaths and narcissists. And the narcissist can destroy an empath.
Oh, gee.
An empath is very sensitive and loving and tends to overgive and feels like they can heal other people with their love if they just hold on enough. But the narcissist isn't wired for empathy, and so they have what's called empathy deficient disorder, meaning that they don't really have empathy as you or I might have
it. They don't seem to be caring, do they?
No, not really. And they don't have the full-blown narcissist or sociopath or psychopath. They don't have the conscience. They don't have, doesn't bother them to do things that are unconscionable. It doesn't, they're not wired in the same way. And so when they're with an empath, they could be extremely seductive and attractive, and the empath is drawn in. But then when you don't do exactly what they say or you don't go according to their plan, they start gaslighting you. They become cold, withholding, punishing, and generally very destructive to the sensitive soul.
Interesting. It is fascinating indeed. When an empath is on, I mean really on, do people like to be around them?
Oh, yes. And not only be around them, everybody tells you their life story. And they just confess. You know, I can't tell you. I really can't go places where people don't come up to me. They don't know I'm a psychiatrist. I could be sitting in the airport and they start telling me.
Just out of the blue.
Yes.
They sense something about you.
Oh, yeah. And it's not just me. It's most empaths. We wear a sign, an invisible sign saying, I can help you.
Out of 100 people, what percent would you say would be an empath?
Well, there's been research done on highly sensitive people, and the figure is 20%.
That's all? That's low.
It's very low. And I don't think it's entirely accurate, especially now since the pandemic and everything going on in the world, empaths are all over the place because the stress has stripped them of their defenses or stripped non-empaths of their defenses. So they're feeling things they've never felt before. And they're open to feelings and levels of stress and connection that they've never had before. And so, I mean, I think the figure is higher now if the studies were redone now.
I'm going to read a definition of an empath and tell me what you think of this one, okay?
Okay.
Do you often just instinctively know how a complete stranger is feeling? Have you frequently noticed someone else's feelings seem to have rubbed off on you? Perhaps you are someone who seems to find every emotion and feel them extremely profoundly, even if it's something simple. These are all signs that you are an empath. An empath is someone highly sensitive to what others around them are feeling. Often empaths aren't even aware of their heightened sensitivity. If you suspect you may be an empath, here are some signs of empathetic abilities that you probably have experienced at some point. And that's some of the things you've already talked about.
Yes.
Pretty accurate?
I think that's very accurate. And empaths, you know, there's a 20-question self-assessment test in the Empath Survival Guide if you want to self-diagnose yourself as an empath, and it's very important. And other questions, in addition to the ones that you read, which are accurate, do noise, smells, or excessive talking overwhelm you? Do I like taking my own car places so I can leave when I please? Empaths don't like to be trapped places. Do I start absorbing other people's stress emotions or actual physical symptoms? So those are other qualities in addition to the ones you read of being an empath. So yes, those are all true, and I think your listeners who are empaths or highly sensitive people can identify.
Do you find that people who may not even know what an empath is tend to congregate and migrate to the empath because they've got their own personal problems?
Oh, yes. Empaths are like magnets for needy people and for anybody who's just looking for a kind heart or a loving response, somebody who's a good listener and really cares about you, in fact, may care too much about too many people and become drained by it. So I think that empaths are magnets. And in a way, you know, the empath, I feel, is going to save the world, because empaths have the heart and the soul. And if they learn how to ground themselves and they're not in emotional pain from taking on too much stress, they have what it takes to be a good human being and to be able to care for themselves and others. And that caring, that empathy, I care about you, you matter to me. Now that is what we all need as humanity.
Let's go through some of the challenges empaths have with this pandemic right now. I have never witnessed a time, Judith, where so many people are depressed, uptight. I mean, it's truly remarkable.
Oh, it is. It is. And the level of rage that's out there, it's huge. But in terms of empaths, it's been a mixed bag for them, because empaths like staying home. They like the quiet. They like lack of crowds and noise. And so a lot of my empath patients are enjoying that aspect of it. However, the isolation and the loneliness and the depression and the uncertainty and the lack of hugs, because people are afraid to hug each other now, it's a whole new mindset that an empath enjoys loving. And when you can't reach out and hug your friends, or when you can't go out and walk freely in the world, you know, without fear, that can cause a lot of depression, a lot of anxiety, a lot of confusion. And so it's a time like none other right now. And so empaths, you know, have to really practice a lot of self-care and try and get the love and touch through their animals or through going out into nature. Empaths love nature. So that's one way that I've gotten through this pandemic as an empath, is going hiking and spending time in the hills or by the ocean. You know, just connecting in that way, that's very powerful. Empaths have a very strong relationship with nature. So that can help soothe you during this time.
Are empaths born, or are they made?
Great question. Some empaths are born. When I was going through medical school and I was delivering babies, I saw that some babies come out, they look like little sensitive Buddhas, and other babies, they look like they're out to conquer the world, but they don't have the same sensitivity.
Hold on, Judith. We'll talk more about this incredible work that you've done, the Empath Survival Guide, up next. Judith Orloff, as we continue. We're going to take your calls next hour with Dr. Judith Orloff. If you're an empath, definitely check in with us. If you've experienced being around someone who is, check in with us as well. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. George Norrie with you, Dr. Judith Orloff with us as we are talking about folks being an empath. And her website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Her books are Thriving as an Empath and the Empath Survival Guide as well. Well, give me your definition, Judith, of a narcissist.
Well, they're a full-blown narcissist, and they're just people with narcissistic traits. But a full-blown malignant narcissist is somebody who has empathy deficient disorder, meaning they're not able to feel empathy as we know it. And there are many theories about why that happens, and research is being done. But it's thought to be perhaps genetic. It's thought to be a modeling phenomena where your parents are narcissistic, so you learn some of those traits from your parents. And some people are just born with it. And to me, as a psychiatrist, it's a deficiency of the heart. It's a crippling of the heart because narcissists don't have the ordinary responses of caring that you might have. If somebody doesn't do something your way, narcissists become cold, withholding, and punishing. And so people with narcissistic traits are not as severe as malignant narcissists. Malignant narcissists do not do well in psychotherapy because they always say it's your fault. It's never their fault. It's always she's the problem, he's the problem, not me. I'm only here to help them. So you can't get anywhere in psychotherapy with that attitude. But people with just some traits of narcissism, which could be self-absorption, a little bit of lack of empathy, but not as severe as a malignant narcissist, they have better luck in psychotherapy because they're more willing to own their own part in any kind of interaction. So people always, you know, are asking me, my patients are asking me about, is it healthy to be in a relationship with a narcissist? If you're in a relationship with a full-blown malignant narcissist, you need to go and get your love and caring somewhere else because you're not going to get it from that narcissist. When you don't do what they want you to do, then they become hurtful and damaging. But with the most people with non-malignant narcissistic traits, you could work with them a little bit. It's not the best scenario, but if that's the person that you choose to be in partnership with, or you have a narcissistic mother or a mother with narcissistic traits, you have to make a decision. If it's a malignant narcissist, you have to lower your expectations because they're not going to fulfill them. If it's someone just with narcissistic traits, you can work with them a little bit more.
We were talking before the break, Judith, about whether a empath is born or made, and you were giving us some baby analogies there.
Well, some babies are born, they're like little Buddhas, and they're so sensitive. Their little hands go up in the air, and they're feeling the environment with their palm, and they're able to sense energy, and it's just so obvious that their sensitivities are there. And so parents can notice babies like that and nurture them and enhance their sensitivities and support them. That's so important because I know as an empath child, I had two parents who were physicians, and they loved me. And they doted on me, but they said things like, oh, dear, you just don't have a thick enough skin, or you need to toughen up. And as a sensitive little girl, that did not feel good. It felt like there was something wrong with me that I had to change. And so there's a lot of shame that parents convey to sensitive children that they need to just get tougher and that will fix the problem. And that's not the communication you want to make to an empath child. You want to say, honey, your sensitivities are beautiful. Tell me about them. Let me help you with them. Let me listen to you. And so you can help this beautiful young being, whether that's a baby, a little child, a teenager, help them to develop their empathy. You want them to develop their empathy, yet learn how to set clear boundaries with people so they don't take on the negativity of the world.
You talk about various types of empaths. How many are there?
Yes, there are about 9 different types that I talk about. And sometimes people relate to more than one type, but the main types are emotional empaths. Those are people who are emotional sponges and pick up the emotions of other people into their own body. They're physical empaths, people who actually can feel what's going on physically in you. If somebody has a stomach ache, the physical empath will feel that pain in their stomach. And so they could feel the physical symptoms and often are labeled as hypochondriacs by traditional doctors because they don't know how to diagnose empaths. And then there's intuitive empaths, people with extraordinary perceptual abilities and heightened intuition and telepathy and all kinds of abilities to communicate with animals and plants, as well as even connect sometimes to those who have passed over. But they're very sensitive. And so there's a subcategory of intuitive empaths, including telepathic empaths, where you receive intuitive information about someone in present time. Like if you're standing there talking to them, suddenly you get information about them. Or precognitive empaths, empaths who have premonitions about the future, through dreaming, through intuition. And then also dream empaths. I happen to be a dream empath. I've listened to my dreams since I've been little. But dream empaths are avid dreamers, and they can receive intuitive information from their dreams that helps others and guides them in their own life. And then there are plant empaths, empaths who have a green thumb and can communicate with plants, earth empaths who can feel the changes of the earth and they're attuned to different changes such as earthquakes or I had one patient who was able to sense if there was an oil spill at, you know, a point on the earth and it would hurt her in her own body.
And she was right, huh?
Yeah, she was right. She is able to tune into this because when the earth is in pain or something happens to the earth empaths know it. And then there are animal empaths who can tune into animals and communicate with them. And so this is very real where they are able to communicate with the souls of animals and can pick up what they need, can pick up information. You get into the whole concept of spirit animals and being open to animal allies that guide you. So being an empath is extremely creative. And an empath can be one type or it can be an overlap of multiple types. Usually empaths have a baseline of one type. For instance, being an emotional empath or being a physical empath. But you can learn and grow and learn how to be the other types, too, and develop those kinds of skills. It is so much fun, and it connects you with life. It connects you with all of life. And so everyone out there, if you don't know you're an empath, take the 20-question self-assessment test in the Empath Survival Guide. Find out if you're a full-fledged empath, medium empath, or a slight empath, and then begin to develop your abilities and learn how to not take on other people's stress or the stress of the world.
Somebody like Robin Williams, who they claim died because he had the Lewy body dementia, you know, was a funny guy, made people happy and everything else. Was he an empath?
Who is this?
Robin Williams.
Oh, Robin Williams, yes. I'm sure he was an empath. I met him at one point, and I sensed that. He's so open. His energy field was so open. And, you know, he was in so much pain that he wasn't able to share with people. You know, the tragedy of the loss
horrible.
Of Robin Williams.
Do empaths generally commit suicide?
No. That's very rare. But it's only if an empath is driven to the edge of their capacity where they can't stand it anymore, or they stay silent about being an empath. So many empaths are ashamed, and they haven't come out of the closet. And one thing I've been so happy about since the Empath Survival Guide has come out, I get so many emails from empaths saying, you have described what I am and who I am, and I've been hiding it, and I feel terrible about myself, but now I don't have to anymore. So if you're an empath, I just want to say you're a beautiful, talented person that needs to come out and honor your sensitivities. You don't want to get to the point where Robin Williams got to, where he wasn't telling people about the depth of his depression or lack of hope. I don't know if he knew he was an empath, but I certainly sensed that when I met him.
Good point indeed. Dr. Judith Orloff with us. We're going to be taking calls next hour. If you're an empath, check in with us. If you're not, check in with us. Does an empath know they're an empath?
Not always. That's the problem, is that they're misdiagnosed by traditional medicine as major depression, panic disorder, bipolar, unipolar depression, all kinds of physical ailments, chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, and they might have these secondary disorders, but if they're not diagnosed as an empath, let's say they're an empath primarily, and that diagnosed is missed, then you're missing the person. You have to diagnose that someone as an empath, learn how to deal with the absorptive qualities so you don't take on all the stress, and then see how these other symptoms kind of fall into place. Because what happens when you begin to learn self-protection is that the other symptoms become much less. You become less depressed, less anxious. And you don't know that until you learn how to work with your empath self. And so the first step is diagnosis. You have to diagnose if you're an empath. Then that changes everything. And I want to say, doctors, many traditional conventional doctors don't know about this. And so you might go to one and say, oh, am I an empath? And they'll look at you and raise their eyebrows. No, but other doctors, Chinese medical doctors, are much more open to this, functional medical doctors. And so more and more physicians and healthcare practitioners are becoming open to this, and I'm training a lot of them. I offer trainings for healthcare professionals. So, little by little, it's changing so that empaths are rightly diagnosed, not as a disorder or a disease, but just as a personality type, really. And then, and that's beautiful. You want to enhance your gifts, and then you can work on strategies to deal with the challenges.
What made you decide to help empaths? The fact that you're one?
Yes, basically, because I was an empathic child who was not supported in my abilities, and it took a lot of years for me to begin to embrace my empathic self, my intuitive self, to not feel shame about that. And so I wanted to help others, other empaths, other sensitive people, other intuitives, come into their own power. It's very important to me. That's my mission. And I have helped numerous people throughout the years, and I see this as my mission on Earth.
Good for you.
Yeah.
What do you mean by setting boundaries with toxic people to help the empath?
By not being a doormat, by learning the word no, and that no is a complete sentence, not letting people dump all over you, and being able to set limits and boundaries to not let somebody rage at you. To be able to set a boundary and say, hey, that's not respectful behavior. I'm going to leave now until you could be calmer. No, or I can't stay on the phone for 2 hours listening. No, if you just want to go around in circles, if you want to get into the solution, that's fine. But otherwise, I'll speak for 5 minutes. Maybe you have a conversation. So the 5-minute phone conversation is a technique that empaths can use to limit chronic talkers and people in victim mentality from just dumping, because empaths literally feel sick from listening for too long.
Can you balance that, though, from not becoming a doormat and also being sensitive enough to care about people?
That's a beautiful way of putting it. Yes, that's the whole point, is to balance it so that you're not a martyr and giving too much of your energy away so you can't function or you feel sick, but at the same time taking care of yourself. So you want your heart to be open. You want to be able to be there for other people. At the same time, you don't want to become a martyr and give so much away you can't function or you don't feel well.
Interesting take on that. This is amazing work you do, Judith.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I feel so blessed to be able to do it, you know, and to have found my passion and to be able to help people. I mean, that's one thing empaths love to do, is to help others. So it's very satisfying.
If you walk past a homeless person and you feel as if you have to help them, which I do, does that make you an empath?
Possibly. it depends. If you feel drained by it or if you feel energized by it?
I don't feel drained by it. Not necessarily. What do you mean by energized by it?
It feels.
You mean
good.
Personally?
Yeah, to feel good. It feels good to give to somebody. It feels good to help others. The problem empaths run into is that they give too much. They feel the suffering of everybody, everything. And so it takes a toll on their body. But if it doesn't affect you in that way, giving is a beautiful thing.
Was Jesus an empath?
Is who an empath?
Jesus.
Oh, I think yes. In my opinion, I think he was an empath. His heart.
He took on the weight of the world.
He took on the weight of the world. He certainly did.
Judith, we're going to take a break here and come back and take phone calls with you next hour. Dr. Judith Orloff is here. Her books are available on Amazon for sure and bookstores, and her website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com.